right.
Oh, for Britta.
Okay.
Greg.
Yeah.
Okay, call to order the House Committee on Education for April 13th, 2015. First thing we're going to do is have a public hearing on 3291. So open a public hearing on 3291. Richard, if you go over what the bill is.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3291 allows school districts and post-secondary institutions of education to apply for funding in the to form a K-20 partnership. It appropriates $2.5 million from the general fund for the purposes of that partnership or those partnerships. It sunsets the funding authority on June 30th, 2017, declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Representative Bueller. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Representative Newt Bueller. I represent House District 54, which encompasses most of the city of Bend. You know, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak about this bill and how it may impact our education system. A robust and innovative education system is really critical to Oregon's future, in my opinion, which I think why we're all concerned about what we see in the high dropout rates, the short academic year, and all the other shortcomings of the current system that we're all way too familiar with at this point. It's clear that things are not working well. Some things may even be broken, and it's why I think it's important to have discussions about bills and ideas like that contained in House Bill 3291. Over the last few years, there's been lots of talk about a K through 20 education continuum, and exactly how that looks in practice is unfortunately not very well defined. In my preparation for the legislature, I thought I would read up on some ideas that were particularly compelling to me, and one that I saw frequently mentioned was this idea of a K through 20 concept or a P through 20 concept. And unfortunately, I was not able to find much about that concept or where it's been done or even tried on a pilot basis. So that's really the genesis of House Bill 3291, is to try to put some, so to speak, meat on the bones of the K through 20 concept. And what the bill in its current form would do is allow a pilot project to encourage school districts and universities to enter into a collaborative partnership agreements to coordinate child's education in Oregon from the very beginning of their course of education to the very end, and hopefully on a more local level. The school districts and universities would be encouraged to come together in a partnerships, applying detail on how they were to engage each other as shareholders, coordinate their services, and much more, as you'll see in the bill. HB 3291 outlines a few of the desired outcomes of this partnership, including more efficient use of resources, better equipping teachers to meet the needs of special needs and ESL students, and hopefully graduating kids with more college credit. It's an innovative alternative education model that has potential to organize education in Oregon in a slightly different fashion. As was mentioned, the bill also sets aside a fund that would be allocated by the Department of Education to applicants as they see fit. Essentially, this is a carrot to encourage school districts and universities to cooperate on such agreements. Oregon gets a lot of attention for our innovation in healthcare, and I think rightfully so. We have that reputation nationally. At this point, and some would say even internationally. We've led the nation in developing many different models of healthcare delivery, and the CCO being the latest addition of that. I believe Oregon also has the opportunity to be a national leader in education, and HB 3291 is a type of concept I think we should discuss and define and hopefully implement at least on a trial basis. So thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any questions? Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only concern that I have is I want this. I am concerned about whether this is an attempt to try to bring in private charter schools as sort of an end run around the process that's presently in place at the state level.
Yeah.
Can you speak to that at all?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Frederick, no intention in that regard. There's nothing in this bill that says anything about charter schools. It also doesn't prevent that from happening. But really what this is focus on is getting that conversation so that we break down the silos between K through 12 and university-based education, and that's really the intent of the legislation.
Just a quick follow-up. There are university laboratory schools, public and private, across the country. I went to two of them, uh-huh. So I know of them. They continue, and I actually went to three of them. We already have that as a model. Is this attempting to use that particular model? What is
this? Yeah, thank you, Madam
Chair. This is different.
Yeah, this would be a more holistic melding of the two between K through 12 and education. So there's more linkage not only from at the high school level, but all the way down to the elementary level, so that you have educational aspects from higher education helping with elementary grades. You have the ability for high school students to have more college credit opportunities. So it's really a whole scale melding of the two, so that there is more cooperation at multiple levels.
Well, just one quick follow-up. That's, in fact, what I'm talking about. I mean, I went to the Southern University Laboratory School and the University of Illinois Laboratory School, as well as laboratory school, I think is what it was called, and another one in Atlanta. So I'm just, yeah. And it was elementary all the way through, so yeah. Just curious about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Frederick, I'm not very familiar with that concept, but certainly I will become so after hearing your comments. So.
Okay.
It's a really interesting idea. I saw a study that was done, not sure the time frame, but fairly recently, it looked at 9 through 14, done by COSA and some other group. Are we familiar with that? And if not, would you like to have the study?
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Verdon, I'm not familiar with the 9 through 14 concept. Can you elaborate for me?
Is that the Frontier Promise?
Taking the whole... Yeah. Probably a hearing
okay.
time, but I'd be happy to email it if that would be
okay. Okay, that'd be great.
Okay. Well, I think, Representative Reardon, there's a program with community colleges and it's a dual credit.
Yes, yes.
And so they work along with the colleges and so on and the high schools to go through and do this. And so my question is, and so from a concept basis, it would be the idea kind of a university lab school, as we used to call. So maybe Bend and Blue Mountain and Oregon State would get together and say, like, what our vision for this area is.
It's up to them how they okay. want that relationship to be, the length and depth of the relationship.
And so it's the idea that if we want to do this, we need help from Oregon State on this thing, and we'd help Blue Mountain and...
Right. And Madam Chair, exactly. And I think just to take one step back, the Eastern Promise, is that mm-hmm. what you're referring to? Yes, I'm familiar with that. I see this as a deeper relationship than just simply college credits. Mm-hmm. I think it's a more integrated, not only for students, but also for faculty, mm-hmm. For teachers to have maybe dual, appointments at the high school and at the university level to, add that kind of professional opportunity for not only teachers, but also professional staff. And I think it's not up to us to kind of over-prescribe exactly what the relationship will be between universities and K through 12. That's for them to work out and apply to the Department of Education and see if it's consistent with the broad outlines that we set out.
Is this also, in the whole realm of education, is it something that could also include like the union trade schools? Because
yeah.
I don't know if there's a training center down in your area, but up here they've got all around they've got great union training centers that you know, schools can no longer have the state-of-the-art equipment in welding and sheet metal and a lot of these other things that these guys have.
Right.
So are they excluded, or could that be part of the partnership?
Yeah, Madam Chair, great point. I think that's such a acute need in the state of Oregon right now. I think that would be a great part of it, especially as the technical skills get greater and the equipment that goes with those technical skills in terms of sharing that equipment and the opportunities, I think would be a great thing to add also. But again, I don't want to be over prescriptive on this. I'd rather leave it up to the local school districts and university and colleges based on what they see they need in their community. But I don't think it should be excluded, certainly.
Okay, so I mean, the language of the bill is pretty open-ended.
But yeah,
it's the idea of all
purposefully
working together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Other questions? Oh, I'm sorry.
It's really about breaking down the silos, you know, both for the students and also for the teachers and the professional staff.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions? Okay. Thank you very much.
Right. Thank you very much.
Do we have anyone else signed up for that? That's it. Anyone else like to speak on House Bill 3291? Okay. Seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 3291 and open up a Did I say public hearing?
You said the right thing.
Okay, thank you. And I'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 3497. Richard, if you could read the...
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3497 modifies the method by which the minimum amount distributed to education service districts, or ESDs, is calculated. It declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015. The committee has been asked to consider the -1 amendments, which... the introduced measure has a minimum distribution of about $1.2 million, and the -1s increase that distribution to $1.36 for the calculation. Mm-hmm. The committee has fiscal and revenue light statements, and the measure has a subsequent referral to the Committee on Revenue.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Rob Myers and Karen Patton. And then we'll hear from Mike Carroll and Robert Waltenberg. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Myers. I represent North Central Grant Wallowa ESDs, and I live in Condon. I have talked with all of you basically and related the facts and the figures to you. So rather than reiterate everything I've always said, I'll just lay out the scenario quickly again. There are five Frontier Rural ESDs. They're North Central Grant, Wallowa, Harney, and Lake. Harney and Lake are not participating in House Bill 3497, but the other three ESDs are. The Frontier ESDs have been flat funded basically at a static level of $1 million since 2003. The problem with that is, having not been indexed to the state school fund, they didn't participate in the incremental increases thereof. So the problem is that had we been indexed to the state school fund, the current floor would be $1,360,000. That's simply what we're saying. ESD allocation from the state school fund has come up $360,000, 36%, as it relates to us since 2003. So I think we're all clear on that. So all we're asking, really all my clients are asking, is to be brought into a position of parity with all the other ESDs in the state. That's it, just pure and simple. And what I'm going to do, as I said, is step back. We're not talking about a real significant amount of money as it relates to the state school fund or as it relates to larger ESDs. It is a significant amount of money proportionately when you start to apply it to small ESDs. So there's a proportionality there that's extremely important to recognize. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer any questions. If not, I'm going to step back and let the people who really are important in this whole discourse take the floor.
Okay, thank you. We'll wait till Ms. Patton is finished, and then we'll ask questions.
Thank you.
And you can sit back.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Is this about right?
Oh, actually, you could even go this far.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Karen Patton, and I'm superintendent of Wallowa Education Service District, Region 18 ESD. Thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. Region 18 serves Enterprise Joseph, Wallowa, and Troy school districts in Wallowa County, which is the most northeast county in Oregon. It's 3,152 square miles in our region and about 1,300 students. So we have like 2.4 students per square mile. We provide the following general fund services for our districts: special education, classified and licensed staff, as well as supervision of that staff, evaluation services, speech and language services. Thank you. Technology infrastructure and technical support, curriculum and school improvement services, and a full suite of business office services. The erosion of the $1 million Frontier ESD service grant has negatively impacted our schools, and we've lost purchasing power over the years. We responded to that loss in many ways. Originally, the ESD board committed cash reserves to maintain service levels. We then made cuts in programs, 504 program, as well as staff reductions in curriculum, administration, and office support.
Yeah.
We've also, gather my thoughts here. Oh, we had our employees took a pay freeze, and then in recent years, school districts have actually committed general fund and reserve dollars to maintain those service levels. Over the past 3 years, our districts have spent $369,000 of their general fund money to maintain services, and that equates to over $95 per ADMW over those past 3 years. So again, it's had a negative impact. If our purchasing power were to be restored, our districts would then be able to reallocate those general fund dollars to basic programs like music, art, foreign language, to co-curricular programs like drama, and they would be able to start updating technology. For example, one of our districts, if they maintained their current replacement rate, they wouldn't replace all their computers over the next 10 years. So we would have students, and do have students, working on very old machines. Districts would also use general fund dollars to update facilities. And I have a district who couldn't take advantage of a discount, an E-rate wireless upgrade that was discountable, because their wiring was too old and they didn't have the money to pay for new wiring. So again, the erosion has negatively impacted our schools, and restoring purchasing power would positively impact. So I encourage you to support 3497-1 to restore our purchasing power. Thank you again for the opportunity to present, and I take any questions you have.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Actually, I have one. So with the funding, you guys have had $1 million in statutes for, you know, however many years. Now, with your funding, you've got the $1 million split over the five ESDs. And then I would assume you have some sort of local funds, whether it's an ESD on the county level, you know, taxation, or something from the purchase services from the local school districts. I mean, or do you have $1 million split over five ESDs?
Each ESD gets $1 million.
Oh, okay.
And in our particular situation, it's all property taxed. We don't take state school fund support.
You don't, like, charge districts for services or anything?
Yes, because the erosion of the $1 million has what we used to be able to provide for $1 million, we aren't able to anymore. And so districts have said they'll commit some of their general fund dollars to maintain that purchasing power. And then otherwise we wouldn't have charged, and didn't in beginning 2003, there were no charges for the services that I mentioned.
Okay, so each ESD would have $1,000,036.
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you,
okay.
Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, these folks are from my district, and so I'm a little bit partial here, and I was supposed to be co-sponsor on this bill, and I didn't get my name on it. But also, Karen, you had mentioned, I think, as far as the taxes collected in your area, I think the ESD, as far as getting payment back or from the state, you know, you collect more taxes than what you get actually reimbursed for. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative, that is correct. We collect about $2.7 million, or we anticipate about that much collection in tax revenues this year. And so we'll have a net return to the state school fund of about $1.6
million. Okay. Okay, other questions? Okay, I'm not seeing any. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, the next we have Mike Carroll and Robert Waltenberg. We'll flip a coin. Thank you, gentlemen.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robert Waltenberg, and I'm the superintendent for Grant ESD and the co-superintendent for North Central ESD. I spend about 3 days a week in John Day and 2 days a week in Condon. A lot of windshield time, a lot of books on CD. So I'd like to thank you all for allowing us to testify in support of this bill. The Dash 1 amendments, Rob and Karen have already given you the kind of the wherewithal on the numbers. I'd like to kind of go over what it really means for my ESD. And when I say my ESD, my historical perspective has been with Grant ESD. I'll let Mike speak to the North Central ESD numbers. So in 2003, Grant ESD had about 24 and a half full-time equivalent employees. In 2013, we had 14.65. Doesn't mean a lot when you talk about 10 people unemployed. What it does mean is that I've had a 40% reduction in my staffing. Now that we are still bound by law to provide those same levels of services, the same services for special ed, technology, administration, and school improvement, but we are doing it with fewer people, and the demands are getting larger and larger from the state. We have combined the role of the director of technology and the role of superintendent. So we've taken two people, smashed them into one, and then we've reduced that to a 0.6 position. And so that is my position. We've eliminated speech and language pathology assistants from each school. We serve all five school districts in Grant County with three SLPAs and one SLPA, or one SLP. We've transferred four special ed teachers, four full-time certified special ed teachers, as well as two full-time special ed assistants to a district. What we did was we gave those people to that district because of some union issues that were going on. My shop is a non-union shop. The school is a union shop, and so we were having some issues with that. So we give them those people, and we give them a check for $236,000 every year. That was 2006. Currently, well, and we'll talk about the cutback on that piece. Those are how we have tried to mitigate that loss of buying power from our districts. My PERS burden in 2003, and I know that's a nasty word, PERS, my people pick up their own 6%. We do not pay for the employee contribution. The PERS burden in 2003, when the $1 million floor was initiated, was 11.1%. My PERS burden this year is 20.99%. And so we're feeling that. And we're still doing this at the 2003 income level, basically. Getting to what the districts are doing to mitigate these impacts. For example, last year, Prairie City School District set aside $45,000 out of their general fund dollars to pay for some special ed services that I could not provide. This year they have had to allocate $78,000. Now in a school district the size of Prairie City, $45,000 is a full-time teacher. It's about three part-time aides. And we all play the game where we try to mitigate the impact of the payroll by keeping people, using them as much as we can, and still trying to eliminate the benefit side of that cost. So in 2014-15, John Day School District, the district that I gave the employees to, remember I said I gave them a check for $238,000 every year. That $238,000 is now, after 10 years, is now $70,000 short of covering those employee costs. So the district is picking up, out of their general fund, picking up those dollars. So anytime we get money redirected from the general fund, that just takes away from program. Now, in January, Representative Beretta was very kind and came down to Grant County on a nice evening, cool evening. Representative Bentz, Representative Huffman, and Senator Ferrioli also attended a forum that we hosted. One thing that Representative Bentz asked of us as ESD people, give us some real examples. Show us how children are hurting. I would love to be able to say that little Susie did not receive her speech-language services, or that little Johnny didn't receive occupational therapy services. But the truth of the matter is that those services are required by law, and if I can't do them as an ESD, the school district picks up those services. They have to. They must. So I would love to do that, but that's where we see the general fund dollars being redirected, and then music or PE or whatever gets cut. Building maintenance, professional development. So, Madam Chair and committee members, I urge you to support the Dash 1 amendments. The numbers that we presented are true. They're factual. The data is undeniable. They're numbers, and you can't do much with them. But thank you so much for your time. And if you have any questions, I am available.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mike Carroll, and I am the co-superintendent of North Central ESD with Robert. And I want to thank you for this opportunity to testify on Senate House Bill 3497-1. As Robert has mentioned, I think this is a really important point, is that many of the services that ESDs provide, especially in the area of special ed, there are no choice about it. They're mandated by law. We have to provide them, and therefore, if we do not have the funding to provide them, the districts have to provide them. So even though in some ways we may not cut our budgets a whole lot, or we have to rearrange things as he has done, it falls back on the districts. I'd like to present most of my figures to you in percentages, because I think when you're comparing large ESDs to small ESDs, one or two FTE to Northwest Regional or Multnomah or whatever, that's nothing to them. I mean, obviously every position is important, but when you compare that to what it is to us, it makes a big difference. So that's why I will be using that. Over the last 4 or 5 years, we've had to cut our ESD spending on special ed by 13%. And so this has meant a decrease in certified staff and classified staff. It's mostly cutting back in time on the certified staff and some actual elimination of classified positions. We would have had to make even deeper cuts, but through the resolution service process, our ESD agreed to spend all of our IDA, that's Individual Disabilities Education Act monies, for the consortium to backfill that. So, but in that, again, comes back to the fact that money was being funneled to the districts. They were being able to use it for instructional assistance and other things in their schools. Now they no longer can, because we're using it to backfill and supply the services that we had been giving them before we had to cut back. We have tried to develop some consumer and technical education programs, normally called CTE programs. We have one in health services. We've had to cut it 60%. We would very much like to be able to bring that back to the full level that it was before. We are very interested in adding another one. We've been working with Columbia Gorge Community College and in their renewable energy technology program, and looking at some STEM grants, and I'm working all of that together to add another CTE program. And this works especially well for ESDs and small ESDs, because we're talking about schools that might have two or three kids that are interested in one of those classes. Well, obviously they can't afford to do that themselves, but if you can get two or three kids in three different districts, then you might have students to make a class. Mm-hmm. And as at least we believe, and I think most everyone believes, that's the mission of ESDs, is to try and be able to make things efficient and possible that wouldn't be possible in other situations. Our early childhood special ed program is a regionally funded program, but they don't have enough money to continue to fully run the program because of our rural nature and the amount of travel and how far OTs, PTs, and things like that, occupational therapists, physical therapists, the other specialists that need to come in. All of that mileage costs a lot more money than it would, say, in an area where those people had traveled 10 miles or 20 miles, as opposed to as much as 100 miles. So we have consistently consistently added to their budget, and that amount that we've been able to add has dropped 75% over the years. The $1 million ceiling has really limited also our school improvement department at the ESD. This is it's cut to 60%. We can only fund 60% of what it used to be, and that is another thing that's extremely important to small school districts, because many of these districts only have one administrator, and therefore they just don't have the time to work with all of this stuff and be up on everything that's coming down in the way of state mandates, especially as it has to do with Common Core and with the Smarter Balance Assessment. So this person still works with them, but to being able to fully fund that would really help expand that, our ability to do that. So again, as with the other people who have testified with this, we all strongly encourage you to support this bill and help us to restore the services to our school districts that we have had in the past. And thank you for the opportunity to
thank you very much. Are there any questions? Representative Reardon?
No. It's really helpful to have a better understanding of how, you know, shortage of funding in this level impacts the K-12 as well, which, you know, we're all working to try to restore that budget. Could you talk just a little bit about the effect on the actual employees? Could you talk about maybe going from 24 employees to 14 and making some adjustments, but how has that affected them? And, you know, maybe on your turnover, do you have more turnover, you know, some other issues that I'm just thinking of more personal
aspects. Madam Chair, Representative Reardon, I think that it is definitely, we've seen more stress in people because they'd have to do a lot of travel. So it's trying to manage that, trying to get to maintain the same amount of student contact time and still get from one place to another. For instance, we have one special ed person who covers all of Wheeler County. So there are three school districts there, and there are like 37 miles or 47 miles between the districts. And so I think that's a personal toll on them. We have had a relatively high turnover, I think, in our areas of special ed. I think that's due to the fact that they don't like that travel. That's not something that people like as part of their job. And we add to that it's not, as we know, obviously from population figures, with Wheeler County being one of the lowest populated counties in the state and not growing very fast, that people, there are not a whole lot of people that are just dying to move to that county. So I think when you add those things together, it makes it much more difficult to find people who want to go there and stay there. So did that answer your question?
Absolutely.
Go ahead, sir.
Madam Chair, go ahead, Representative. A couple of specific examples. We have our early ed office in North Central ESD. That office has lost funding over the years, so they've looked to grant funding. We had two, it was a three-person office this last summer. We had two of those people say, you know what, we have openings available in our local school districts. We're tired of wondering if we're on the chopping block every year. We're going to take those, even though we've invested them. Pile of money into these two people. They're now employees of local school districts. The other example is I drive a lot and I'm tired. I really am. And you guys get it. I mean, Representative Brenno, you really get it. We've tried to minimize, we've tried to save as much as we can and not impact the services to the kids. And I don't mean to sound like, oh, God, do it for the kids. Mm-hmm. That's not the case. This is the reality of the situation. If we can get away with reducing our superintendent position to a 0.4, or we can start sharing, next year we'll be sharing, we'll actually be providing some superintendent services to one of the component districts as well. So that's going to, it's just, that's how we do it. That's how we have to make it work.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you were getting to my point. Used to live in John Day, so I know what it's like to drive a bunch of miles, and I don't know that you've yet conveyed to us, you say travel a lot. I travel 35,000 miles a year. I travel a lot. But what we're talking about is paying somebody 3 hours mm-hmm. to drive, to sit in their car and listen to music, to do whatever they want to do. You're paying them 3 hours, hour and a half there and back. That is not unreasonable. That is not unreasonable. That is not the exception to have them work for a student 20 minutes or 30 minutes. And forgive me, but I'd like you to capture that a little bit better, because I think sometimes we miss that you are traveling three or four times the amount you're spending with the kid. That's compensated time, certainly. We won't mention winter. I've drove those roads in winter.
Elk and deer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Springer. I think that what we do is try to concentrate so that the teacher does spend time, for instance, in Wheeler County, and they spend the morning in one school district and the afternoon in another. So I don't want to take away from what you're saying, because I think it's very true that we spend a lot of time, a windshield time, compared to student contact time, just so that we can make that work. But you're right. So we've got a teacher that may drive an hour to get to Mitchell, for instance, and then they'll spend two and a half hours there working with students. Good. They'll then try to squeeze lunch in somewhere and get to Spray so that they can be there in the afternoon and then work with two or three students. And then that same teacher, because she has to serve all of those, doesn't live in Fossil, which is 40 miles from where she lives. So the next morning she gets up, and because Fossil's a little bit bigger school district, she can usually spend the full day there serving kids, but she's still got an hour of time. And then, of course, once in a while, we're going to have her come into the ESD office in Condon. And so what you're saying is exactly true, and those are examples. And Robert mentioned early Ed, but I guess what is maybe the best example is our EIECSE, that early intervention, early childhood special education person. Mm-hmm. She covers all three counties, and she lives in Sherman County. So, you know, she can drive 2.5 hours from her home to Mitchell to check on an early childhood special ed student. And in this case, that might very well be one student, and she drives all the way over there. Hopefully she can either stop, see someone in Fossil or Spray on the way or the way back, but still, I think that it's very difficult unless you've lived in our part of the state and driven those miles every day. Now, Robert and I choose to do this, but I drive 70 miles one way to work, and Robert drives 90 miles one way to work when he comes to Condon. He drives 30-some miles one way when he goes to work in John Day, because he lives in Dayville. So it's just, it's part of the job. We enjoy that lifestyle, and we mm-hmm. choose to do it, but it's still a reality, and that has to be dealt with.
There are also critters on those roads.
Yeah, I can guarantee you that 3 years ago, I hit 5 animals in 1 year.
Yep.
4 deer and 1 elk. I think I've finally figured it out, because I haven't hit anything in 3 years, so but it was definitely a bad year for me.
Don't jinx yourself
now.
Yeah,
knock on wood over there.
Okay, Representative Frederick.
Thank you. There's another aspect that I think is important as well. You are the electronic and the digital system cannot really replace what you need to have as a person there for the various issues that you were talking about. So they have to be there. You can't just put them up on Skype and get a chance to talk with the kids. So I appreciate the work that you're doing, and I have been over there a number of times myself. So there's a lot of land. There's a lot of driving within that. It's going to be important to get support that you have, that you need for those kids and for your staff. So thank you very much for bringing it here.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I have one. So in other words, the $365,000 for the 5 ESDs each. Now, when they set the $1 million, I think from what you guys said is that you all were frozen at or had $1 million, yet the other ESDs in the state were getting additional dollars every year. Is that why you came up with the $360,000?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct. Basically, it's fluctuated some, but about approximately 4.5% is the figure that's been used the most of the state school fund has gone to ESDs. And so, yeah, there's been some up and down in the last 12 or 13 years that we're talking about, but that trend has been a 36% increase over those 13 years where we have been flat funded for that time.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, thank you. And I noticed all of you drove over 100 miles here today. We have this checked off on the sheet. That was a short trip.
Madam Chair,
Thank you. Oh, excuse me.
Just one more thing. You know, it is a big country over there, and you do drive a long ways, but it's not that small or not that large because Robert used to work for me, and he reminded me this last year. You remember the first words you said to me? I said, no, not really. He said, you handed me a broom and said, see if this fits your hand. And I just want to vouch for these guys that they are hard workers.
Good. Thank you very much.
Those
are the only ones we had signed up for House Bill 3497. Anybody else want to speak on House Bill 3497?
The one we're talking about right now.
Okay. With that, I'm going to close a public hearing on House Bill 3497.
Open a work session. Can you give me 5 minutes?
Yeah. We're going to stand at ease for a couple of minutes. Work session on House Bill 3497. Okay. I'm going to open again the work session on House Bill 3497. Representative Frederick?
Yes, Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3497, dated April 2nd, 2015.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves to adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 3497, dated April 2nd, 2015. Is there any discussion?
Yes, please. Just very briefly, Richard, if you would go over those since I had a meeting at the beginning.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Springer, the -1s increase the minimum distribution. The minimum distribution in the introduced measure is $1.23 million. The -1s increase it to 1.36 for the reasons mentioned in testimony before.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Is there any objection? Seeing none, the -1 amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 3497 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 3497 to the floor.
As amended.
Sorry.
With a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Revenue by prior reference. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Tia, could you read the roll, please?
Representative Barreto?
Aye.
Representative Pat?
Aye.
Representative McClain?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. Okay, and I close the work session on House Bill 3497. And I'm going to open it. Pardon?
Do you need to carry
it? It's going to revenue.
No, it's going to revenue. Okay, and with that, I open up a work session on House Bill 2655.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2655 does a number of things. The committee's been asked to consider the -8 amendments, the -8s replace the introduced measure. They direct the State Board of Education to adopt specified standards related to student education records. They provide that parents and adult students have a right to excuse students or be excused from statewide standardized summative assessments, and that school districts must provide notice of that right to parents at the beginning of the school year. They mandate that a school district or public charter school shall provide notice of the opt-out option. They mandate supervised study time for those students excused. They mandate notice of information about summative assessments, including dates of assessments, class time required for administration of assessments, and information relating to assessment results. And they require that those things all be sent to parents and adult students at least 30 days prior to the administration of the actual assessment. The -8s detail the Department of Education processes in the case of school performance reporting being negatively impacted by individuals or volumes of individuals being excused from summative assessments. The -8 sunset portions of the measure relating to reasons for excuse after 6 years and declare an emergency effective July 1, 2015. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact for the -8 amendments.
Okay, so basically the difference between what we heard in this is a 6 year and two notifications. I think so. Okay.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -8 amendments dated 4-6-15.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves to adopt the -8 amendments dated 4-6-15. Is there any discussion?
Aye.
Representative Reardon.
It's very difficult to oppose a bill sponsored by people and organizations that I hold in such high esteem. And I do acknowledge that there are some parents and teachers that have great concerns.
According to Sunday's Oregonian, about 5% have opted out in Portland Public, much higher rate than other metro districts, but still less 1,200 out of 25,000. Individual schools, though, interestingly, ranged anywhere from zero opt-outs to 100, which demonstrates to me the effect that leadership makes in their school. Concerns have been raised here, and we are responding. There is a test work group that will look at many aspects of assessments. Today, there were two amendments on OLIS. The one that we're voting on offers a six-year sunset, and it would contend to be very difficult to end the opt-out if that becomes desirable after 6 years. Basically, we're throwing out the investments and the long hours devoted to implementing the Common Core Smarter Balance. The other amendment, -12, recognizes the concerns of parents, students, and teachers, but also the value of the existing assessment system. This amendment offers a two-year sunset and reduces the number of notifications from 2 to 1. I believe one notification given 30 days prior to the test gives ample notice. It reduces the cost to districts, something we should all applaud. Wow. Much of this bill is an unfunded mandate, something most of us have spoken against at one time or another. I started with the idea that any opt-out is a mistake. I still have concerns that in some cases the data will be skewed, hurting the schools and even individual teachers. But after meeting with our state's chief education officer, I was convinced that a two-year sunset has some merit. It allows tests to be taken and data to be gathered to the benefit of the school system. It will provide information about the test itself that can be used to improve the test. If nothing else, can we make it shorter? But mostly a two-year sunset maintains a level of tension in the system that will drive improvements. It should motivate the work group to ensure we have an assessment system that helps us make informed, objective, transparent decisions, and it helps all students, whether they be of color, have a disability, in ESL, or white. I'll concede that some have concerns about the new standardized summative assessment, but having good data makes abundant sense. I've worked with fellow teachers and used the test data to collaborate on SMART goals, which led to improvements throughout my school and in my own classroom. I know that the data has been used to identify discrepancy between schools and spurred efforts to make improvements. That's happened within my own district. And even advocates for poor and minority children are pushing a novel idea, as cited in yesterday's Oregon, standardized tests as a civil right. Let's be reasonable. We need to continue to build on what we've learned and the investments made to date. We must continue to improve our system of schools to benefit of all students and educators that work within that system. I cannot support a bill that would do any less. I will be voting no on this amendment in this bill.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Actually, we're going to move to adopt the amendments. We'll open it up for discussion.
Okay.
Did we do that yet?
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Is there any further discussion? Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I would agree with Representative Reardon. It's 6 years seems like a long time to not utilize the testing or to have the option to opt out. And 2 years, not that I would necessarily concur with the Oregonian and what they say, but or use them as a sounding board. But 2 years would allow you to change that criteria and to reevaluate rather than waiting 6 years to reevaluate. So I would be a no on this, too.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hack from Representative Frederick.
I'm going to say a lot the same as these folks did, and I've been saying it. I agree that parents should have the option to opt out, but I think that 6 years is far too long. I think that one, it takes away the urgency for us to make some decisions on what we're doing for assessment. I think it prolongs the work that we need to do. I think 2 to 4 years maximum should be the time that we opt out. I think it's going to skew the assessment that we do. I think that those that opt out are probably going to be the parents that are most involved, and students that are involved in lots of different extracurricular activities and probably are doing very well in school. So my concerns are, I believe, relevant to those students that will end up being assessed. I'm concerned about the fact that if we get a group of parents that decide they don't like how a teacher is teaching and they decide to opt out with their kids, that that may affect teacher evaluations. But again, I understand that parents should have the option to do that. I'm not saying that they shouldn't, and I'm not saying that our assessments aren't a mess right now. But I think that it is absolutely imperative that we be extremely thoughtful about how long we do this for. And I sincerely, I am just sickened at the idea that we go 6 years, because I honestly believe it takes away from our doing the due process that we need to in a timely manner. I feel compelled to allow parents the option to opt their kids out, so I probably will vote yes. I may change my mind between now and the time it hits the floor.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I completely disagree with 6 years.
Okay, thank you. Representative Frederick.
Well, there are a couple of quick things. One is, first of all, you don't have to wait 6 years. You just can. This is not saying you have to opt out for 6 years. You can get a chance to opt out each year if you decide that those things are an effort. This is not toss out anything. It is saying that there's a significant concern, and I think we are trying to speak to that concern in a number of different ways. And finally, let me make it very clear that this is a civil rights issue, but one of my neighbors, a fellow named Horace Mann Bond, made it very clear back in the 1920s that he felt that certain tests were not designed necessarily to help, but were in fact designed to categorize certain populations rather than to help those populations. And the NAACP in Seattle yesterday came out against the Smarter Balance tests there as a result of looking at how they were being used in Seattle, as well as across the country. This is not, as much as some folks would like to characterize it, somehow helping low-income, these tests are somehow helping low-income and minority students. They are not. There's no evidence whatsoever that that is in fact the case. But it is being used as a rhetorical device in many cases. So I would, I just want to point that out. I think this, the 6 years, and I've got to say this finally, I wanted no limit at all. I wanted the ability for folks. So this is, for me, it's a significant compromise to have 6 years. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This is really an easy decision for me. I had Bill 2835, the Common Core opt-out, and it mysteriously disappeared Friday. But anyway, be that as it may, to me, this is a good fallback position. I think summative testing is a failure. I think it will prove to be a failure in the long run. I think that ultimately the K-12 system needs to get this thing figured out. And I don't think summative testing is part of that solution. So to me, this is not what I wanted either. I wanted a Common Core opt-out, and for me, this is a secondary position that I'm entirely comfortable with.
Okay, thank you. Representative McLean.
Well, I'm going to be voting in favor of the opt-out today, and it took a lot of thinking on my part, too, because I agree with Representative Hack that you want to feel like there's an opportunity for good results and good data. But I actually got a letter this last Friday from a former student of mine who is actually in charge of testing in one of the high schools in the state of Oregon. And her comment was that as a person who's an administrator giving the tests and in charge of all the tests for the school, that she didn't understand what the problem was when there were so many other ways to actually have data on any particular student. We have writing samples. We have other tests that the students take. We have other standardized tests that the students take. And she said that as a test administrator, she would have absolutely no problem because she has other data that she puts into the reports for the Department of Ed. And so with that feeling of security that there is other information, there are other ways for us to get information and data about schools and about students, I think that this opt-out is really important for for the parent to feel as if they have some say in their own child's education. And so that's why I'm going to go forward today. Also, as was pointed out by Representative Frederick, just because you put a sunset in there in six years, seven years, eight years, 2 years, we can go back and address it at any time. It's not as if we can't go back and have another conversation. So for those two reasons, and in fact, the federal government right now is still having some conversations on how they will allow us to use the test and what we can do with the test, and there's a lot of legislation in front of them right now that actually has support of both parties. So I think there's a lot of changes that could happen in 2 to 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and I think we just need to do what's best for 2015, and I think this will be a good start.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Hack.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to my good colleague here to my left, your concerns about the civil rights issue and the kids in poverty, that's my concern exactly. My concern is that who will be their voice in the opt-out? If their parents aren't active, and we've got kids of poverty who whose parents aren't active and they don't know that they can opt out, and those kids don't have that voice, I'm concerned about that. And so, you know, if you look at this and we go deeper into that, should we have said teachers have the option to step in, or a counselor has the option to step in for those kids? Because who is their voice? And then when I talk about the fact that the ones who are probably going to opt out are going to be the parents who are involved, who are at those schools, who know and have the knowledge and pay attention, those are going to be the ones my concern are that opt out. And that my exact point is, who you were talking about are the ones I am the most concerned about that end up being left in that pool. So that is why I am greatly concerned that this is such a larger issue that we cannot afford to sit back and wait, and it has to be addressed, and those are the ones I'm really, really worried about. So I love that you brought that up.
Well,
and I want you to know I feel that way, too.
Thank you. And if I may respond.
Yes.
This is exactly why we have not just one bill or two bills in dealing with this. We have a work group of folks who are looking at this, at both the testing and all of those things, to try to speak to some of those folks, those young people, the parents who do not know about this and who do not understand. And then we also have a work group that's saying, what's going to be the best way for us to really address the learning? Because this is not just the testing, it's the learning that we're supposed to be dealing with. And that should be the primary issue. So it's not, I think that this is just one, allows one thing to take place where parents can say this is something that they are concerned about. And then the next step is to have the various work groups that we've already passed bills about through this committee to really speak to those issues. So that's, I agree, this is the concern, and I have seen this take place before with the SimCam, with No Child Left Behind. A number of these things we've had before, efforts to try to deal with these issues. I think it's now time to really decide we're going to work on it, because if we have lower scores or lower achievement, the question then becomes, how do we get that greater achievement? It's not via a test. It's doing something more.
Okay, thank you. Usually we do this verbally, but I think we will have a roll call. If the clerk could call the roll on the dash 8 amendments, please.
Representative Hatt?
Yes.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
No.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Barreto?
No.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Yes.
Vice Chair Springer?
No.
Chair Doherty?
Yes. Okay, with that, the amendments are adopted. Representative Frederick?
Yes. Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 2655 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2655 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any other discussion? Okay, you've seen none.
Yes.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have wrestled with this bill a ton, because I think I definitely agree that parents, they do have the option to opt out now. It's certainly not as easy and as open as this by any means. And I think what this bill and this discussion shows to us all is this is a really big deal. It's a big deal to legislators. It's a big deal to parents. It's a big deal to kids. And we had them come in there and come in here and tell us, and my own said, this is how you just got to figure out how to do this, and then you can do it, and it's not about the learning. Not the best moment, but it's the truth. it's the truth. And that didn't come from me. So clearly we have students saying this is an issue to us. Frankly, this bill causes some fear in me, and I'll tell you where the fear comes from. A couple things. First, I've read some studies, 5%. Numbers are all over the board. Some, it's 20% opt out. My fear is not that 20% opt out. My fear is that when you have a significant number opting out, it certainly sets the stage for schools, for administrators, for districts, for teachers, for everybody to say, you know, the data's not good or valid because so many are out of it. And are we eroding then some level of accountability, which causes a lot of fear for me. The amendment says at the beginning of the year, you'll receive this notice, and then it says at least 30 days prior to the administration of statewide summative assessments. I would hope this would never happen, but I'm pretty practical. I would hate the thought that the possibility exists that a student who isn't going to perform well on a test is offered a form. And that, again, that causes a ton of fear. So I'm a no. I may end up a yes on the floor because this is important to people. I just don't know that we've gotten to the issue that we want to solve the best way that we possibly could.
Okay, thank you. Okay, any other discussion? Okay, clerk, read the roll, please.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
No.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Representative Bretto?
Aye.
Representative Hack?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
No.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. Okay. The motion passes and the bill is sent to the floor, and we'll have Representative Gorsuch carry it on the floor. Okay, thank you. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 2655 and open up a work session on House Bill 2982. Richard, would you read it, please?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2982 appropriates money, specifically $700,000 from the general fund to the Department of Education for the purpose of funding proficiency-based teaching and learning demonstration sites. It declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2015. There is no revenue impact, and a fiscal light statement has been issued because the measure contains a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 2982 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 2982 to the floor with the due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Will the clerk read the roll, please?
Representative Peluso?
Aye.
Representative Reardon?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
No.
Representative Bretto?
Aye.
Representative Hack?
No.
Representative McLean?
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick?
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer?
Aye.
Chair Doherty?
Aye. And with that, the motion passes. Okay, I will close a work session on House Bill 2982 and open up a work session on House Bill 3180. Richard?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3180 allows the TSPC, the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, to use monies in the National Board Certification Fund to assist candidates with expenses related to attaining certification through the National Board for Professional Teaching Standards. It declares an emergency effective July 1, 2015. It has no revenue impact. A fiscal light statement has been issued because the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Office of the Speaker have requested that the bill go to Ways and Means.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, I move House Bill 3180 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Okay. Okay, Representative Frederick moves House Bill 3180 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there a discussion? Is there any discussion?
Was there any opposition to this bill?
Pardon?
Was there any opposition on this?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
Right.
No, there was not.
Madam Chair. Any money that it would cost is coming out of general funds?
Yes.
Okay.
It's apparently there already is a fund for the national teacher mm-hmm. testing, and this just the way that Representative Comp is talking about me, and correct me if I'm wrong, it just has it again for the national testing, but just in different avenues.
Okay.
That sound about right?
Okay.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. Seeing none, the clerk read the roll, please.
Representative Reardon.
Get to go first.
We're shaking it up today.
Yes.
On your toes. Yeah.
Representative Wilson.
Aye.
Representative Barreto.
Aye.
Representative Pack.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Paluzzo.
Aye.
Vice Chair Frederick.
Aye.
Vice Chair Springer.
Aye.
Chair Gordon.
Aye. And with that, 3180 is passed. And so I close the work session on 3180. And one thing we will need to do is, from the public hearing today, is to carry over House Bill 3291. That is on the record. We're going to have a public hearing and work session on 3291. Carrying over. Anything else? That's it. We are adjourned. Anything else? That's it. We are adjourned.